You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Shimon Addy. Shimon, thanks so much for being with me today.
And thank you, Brainerd, for inviting me to join you.
So let's talk about what you're working on now. It seems almost like a trick question for you, because I imagine, you know, you're working on a number of different things, and so rather than introduce all the things you've been involved in, perhaps we'll get to that in the process of talking about your current work and other things. So yeah, if we could jump into that, what are you working on at the moment or involved in?
Well, I've had a very busy and active last 12 months, part of which I'm recovering from, meaning in the afterglow of, which is that I had a major museum exhibition in the late spring, and then another exhibition in Germany over the summer, both of which in some way, broadly defined, dealt with the issues related to refugees and migration, but in a very particular visual language and aesthetic. So at the moment, I'm simultaneously sort of basking in the afterglow of those two exhibitions, I'm in the very, very early stages of a new project for New York City, which is where I live. I'm for different reasons, I'm probably not at liberty to say too much about it in a very specific way, but I can discuss it in broad strokes.
Sure, let's do that. And you're talking about a public project for New York City?
Yes, exactly. It's going to be a public site-specific media installation that will be floating in the waterways around Manhattan and Brooklyn, that will also deal with the issues of immigration and refugees, you know, I want to say in our current moment. You
so
know,
that's in the phrase. East River you're talking about?
That's actually correct. It's primarily going to be in the East River, and it is currently scheduled to open to the public precisely about a year from now, September 2018. And shouldn't get too specific, but it will involve my engaging with a number of different local refugee and immigration groups and communities in the New York City area. And I am going to create a moving image piece, like a large scale video installation that will be floating in the waterways, close to the shoreline. And visible to people on the shore, sometimes on the shores of Manhattan, and sometimes on the shores of Brooklyn. And this installation will then also sometimes park at predetermined and pre-publicized locations where people can also get very, very up close, and there'll be some accompanying collateral programs, related to the issue of refugees and immigration in our current, again, it has a, you know, we all know that these issues have a certain, unfortunately, an especially heightened poignancy at the moment, given the social, political climate and context in which we are living.
Well, that sounds ambitious and kind of fascinating, and also helpful in many ways, right? Activist oriented in terms of its social engagement. Is there? I know you can't talk much more about it, but are you partnering mm-hmm. with a public arts organization to produce that? You don't have to name them if you don't want.
Yes.
Being produced.
I am. I think it should be okay to name them. It's a New York City-based nonprofit called MoreArt.org, and they focus on producing public artworks that engage local communities in New York City. one of the challenges of talking about my work in general, because you mentioned that it sounds activist oriented, et cetera, which perhaps it is, but I'm an artist, so I try to make sort of, you know, compelling, visually compelling and artistically strong and resonant artworks that are, you know, emotionally and affectively penetrating. Indeed, I make work about issues, or that's inspired by issues that I care about, but ultimately I'm trying to be a good artist. And to make strong work. So I don't see it like sort of, let's say the extreme case would be like agitprop or something. It's not message oriented in that sense. It's a bit more, let's say multivalent. Let's say like how poetry would be, open to different kinds of interpretation, but including some of the ethical and political and social issues of our time. You know, these things are not binary, they're not oppositional, they're sort of additive together.
So let's talk about the past shows that you've done, because that'll also shed more light on that.
Sure.
Would that be okay to talk about the two shows that were just done, or one of them?
Yeah, let me talk about the show that I had in St. Louis at the St. Louis Art Museum, which ran from April 1st of this year to the end of June. And I showed two works. One was a commission to create a new work of art of my choice. It was actually kind of like two simultaneously running parallel solo exhibitions. So one was a commission to create a new work, and I created a kind of a hybrid sculptural video installation called Lost in Space, and then parenthetically, After Huck. Now, the St. Louis Art Museum happens to be located about, for those of your listeners who aren't familiar, it's located about 7 minutes by car from the Mississippi River. And it's located about 7 minutes by car from Ferguson, Missouri. And so I was struck by this, both of those things being true. And I basically conflated those two issues, or the conflation of those two issues is what inspired my piece, Lost in Space. It's an immersive installation. You enter a dark room. In the center of the room is a large, brilliantly lit cast sculpture of what appears to be like a Huckleberry Finn raft of sorts, except there's a public safety light rotating on it. You could say, okay, this is like a police light or a fire truck light or an ambulance light. And it's floating in the middle of the air, this floating sculpture. And it's spotlit from above, so it's still within a dark void. And it's surrounded by a six-channel video installation of we took nighttime photographs of American cities that were taken from NASA satellites, and we animated them. So you walk into the room, you see the sculpture, you think you see all these points of light that are very slowly moving around the room. You think that you're looking up at the cosmos. Feels like almost like a planetarium with a big sculpture popped in the middle of it. You think you're looking up at the cosmos. But then slowly, a larger, denser cluster of lights come in, and then which are actually suburbs, let's say. And then it continues to get denser and denser, and then you realize, oh my goodness, I'm not looking at the sky at all. I'm actually up in space looking down at Earth, at American urban centers. And then every few minutes, one of the large cities gets sort of obliterated by a bolt of lightning, to like as a palate cleanser, and we start over again. So these urban centers are, you know, places where some of these issues of race, of police, of community relations, et cetera, are taking place. It's basically it's kind of a visceral anesthetic experience. I can spoon feed to you, which I've been doing, the content or what inspired me to do such a piece. But it's also quite open-ended. Because there is a lot that's not said, and a lot of space is left for the viewer to supply the meaning themselves. So there's a soundscape as well. The other piece is called.
Well, before you talk about the other piece, what was the what was the reaction to that one? Was there a, since as you're saying, right, there's room for interpretation and kind of projecting yourself into it in some ways. What did you hear in regards to that? Was there anything that came out of it that surprised you or worth?
It's a very good question. First and foremost, people felt it was very beautiful, extremely beautiful. The piece gave a lot of eye candy in a sense. It was kind of beautiful to behold. And then, in fact, I did hear from different people who were in the galleries, and they were also overhearing conversations of visitors next to them, how people slowly supplied them their own meanings and would sort of put the pieces together and even made the connection with the present day. And I was sort of conflating this late 19th century, right? I forget at the moment, 1883. I'm probably missing up the year when The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn was written,
right?
Kind of like a 19th century allegory of American race relations in part, right? That's one interpretation of the book. And with early 21st century, relations. And, people were slowly feeling kind of coming to terms with and recognizing some of the content that was driving the piece. But what was beautiful about it, from what I heard, is that it's not like you walk in and you say, oh, I get this message. I get a message here. It's this. It's more that I walk in and I have an experience. And then you kind of ponder what the experience is about, and then slowly these other aspects kind of come in and deepen the experience. I think because there's a lot of sensitivity in St. Louis around issues. I mean, I'm not even going into the last 48 hours from what's been happening in St. Louis with the arrests, the recent, I think 80 people were arrested in the last, maybe it's even more by now.
Right, but just to mark that in time, that's one aspect of these interviews, right? They're taking place over real time, and in this political context, what you're referring to is the huge riots that have taken over downtown, stopped traffic, broken windows, in reaction to the police acquittal of shooting.
Exactly. So it's exactly so literally as we speak. But in any case, those issues are very sensitive in St. Louis. And then there was a huge controversy also related to the Kelly Walker exhibition at the Contemporary Art Museum in St. Louis last year. And the point being is that one of the challenges of this project, which I hope that I succeeded in meeting, was how to engage some of these issues, but in a way that's not pedantic or pedagogic, that's more stimulating of an experience rather than dictating a message. So the feedback I got from it was very, very positive. I think if I had been more heavy-handed, the piece is not at all heavy-handed. It's quite.
Right.
It really has a kind of a light touch around it, and again, you think you're looking at the stars and the nighttime stars in the sky, and in fact, only slowly do you realize you're actually looking. Oh, that's maybe like a light post in rural North Dakota. Oh, there's two more. Oh, it's getting a little denser, urban, and then it sort of builds up, and then suddenly a city comes in. But I did receive very good feedback on it. I'm happy to say. Shall I go to the other project?
Yeah, let's talk about the other piece. Yeah.
So the other piece is also what I showed in Germany over the summer. The other piece is a single channel art video, like a film, short. It's 8 minutes long that I made with seven Syrian refugees who at the time of the piece's making had recently arrived in Europe. Most of them on rafts over the Mediterranean. The piece is called The Crossing, and I should mention that my father's family comes from Aleppo in Syria. But in any case, I was invited to come to Europe and create a new artwork of my choice. This is a couple of years ago when the production was. And this was what I wanted to work with. So I, a bit like the upcoming New York piece, I got quite involved with various community groups, refugee organizations in Europe, and began to meet Syrian refugees and discuss with them what I wanted to do. And I eventually found the seven participants who I thought would be good for the artwork. It's a bit of an unusual, like many of my pieces, it's a bit of an unusual artwork in the sense that I took the notion, after reflecting on the topic for a long time, my thoughts coalesced around the notion that perhaps the game of roulette, like what you would play in a gambling casino, might be an apt metaphor or distillation for the refugee experience in terms of the forces of life that are inside of our control and the forces of life and, of course, death that are outside of our control. Some of us are very fortunate. Some refugees are fortunate. They arrive in their destination countries. They safely cross the Mediterranean. They're able to leave their war zone. And others, as we know, are not so fortunate. They're either kidnapped or disappeared before they have a chance to leave, or maybe they drown in the Mediterranean, or they, in any case, don't reach their destination country. And of course, for all of us, there's also the same issues, perhaps in a slightly, more muted in terms of what's in our control and what's not in our control. So I filmed the seven participants in a former gambling casino around a roulette table. There's no speech, there's no talking. They are choreographed in seven tableaus, one after the other. It's very slow moving, even though the piece is only eight minutes long. They're holding these static poses in tableaus, and slowly, one by one, they disappear from the table. We don't see them walk away, but they're gone. There's seven, six, five, four. At the end, there's one last person standing, basically. And we don't know if they left because they won or because they lost. We're sort of left to consider those possibilities, and there's a kind of an emotional tension in the piece. And like with many of my video works, it's filmed with quite high production values, sort of like Caravaggio-esque type lighting, with sort of rich old master painting, shadows and skin tones, etc. So it's very beautiful to look at. So that was in the other space at the museum.
Mm-hmm. That sounds very beautiful and of course evocative of so many things. Are to step back a little bit from the kind of both of these, where will works like this end up? They sound more like they may be acquired by museums or do private collectors acquire these things? Where do works like this go?
Well, I'm very happy. It's kind of a timely question because I'm very happy to be able to say that the St. Louis Art Museum acquired, recently it became official, only last week was it official, they acquired the crossing for their permanent collection, which I'm very happy about. And there may be other institutions that will as well. As there's a, you know, it's an edition, a limited edition. The Lost in Space piece, which is a lot, you know, that's like a larger, quite a very ambitious installation, that had its first showing at the museum in St. Louis. And then it is going to be shown by my gallery, Jack Shaman Gallery, at their upstate space called the School in Kinderhook in Columbia County. It's a very large, maybe some of your listeners have been there to the school. It's a former school that the gallery purchased and turned into essentially what feels very much like an art museum, a beautiful space. But we don't have a date yet for that. But it's I would guess it's within the next 12 months that will go up. And where it ends up as a final home, this I don't know yet. That's in process.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. That's exciting. And before we go, I want to ask the question I ask everybody at the end, kind of off topic question. What are you reading at the moment? Could be anything at all.
Well, I just finished reading. Yeah, you know, I live in the East Village in Manhattan, or what some people might call Alphabet City, the Far East Village, and I live about a block or two away from Tompkins Square Park. And on Tompkins Square Park is a very famous, iconic building, Art Deco building with an illustrious history called the Christadora. So I just finished reading Tim Murphy's novel, Christadora, which was very much about sort of the kind of the local, cultural, artistic, AIDS activist era in this part of Manhattan. I mean, those are some of the layers that inspired the novel. So I just finished reading that, which is lovely. And I didn't start reading it yet, but I finally pulled it off my bookshelf. My next book, and this is a book that, you know, probably many of your readers have already read and beat me to. I've been hearing about it for years from a couple of friends. The Kite Runner. About the Afghan, it takes place in Afghanistan. I think it was made into a movie, Khaled Hosseini's novel. But I haven't started it yet, but that's my next book.
Very good. And the Christadora, that's on
Avenue B.
Avenue B
and
7th and 8th or something?
No, it's a little further north. It's Avenue B, and I'm not remembering if that's the corner of 9th. It's at the corner of either 9th or 10th.
Right. And now it's something of like a luxury building, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
That sounds fascinating, that particular history there at that time, which must have been, depending on how it's referenced, that's kind of it is an iconic building. I never thought about it that way, but especially in that area, that's kind of a,
right. And the characters in the book, and the characters in the book, their lives traversed through the Christadora, hence the reference to the building. So,
well, yeah. Simone, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure hearing about your work, and I wish you great luck with the upcoming public project.
Thank you so much. It was great talking with you too, Brainerd.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.